So the first thing I love to do is ask you all the things you don't want to talk about. What are all the things we don't want to talk about today? First, introduce yourself. That would be helpful, right?
Hello, radio fans. This is John Doe, live from, well, taped from Austin, Texas at the South by Southwest convention.
That was lovely. You sounded like, what's his face? The guy who sold the Timex watches? The guy who used to come on at midnight and say, it's New Year's?
Kurt somebody, I don't know.
Oh, yeah. Not Cobain, however.
No.
No, wasn't
him. No, not a Kurt. Not that Kurt.
So what are all the questions you just do not want me to ask you today?
Oh, top of the list would be, so how was it in X?
In 1981, the first performance when you sung Los Angeles and...
Well, if it was that specific, it would be great. No, it's just...
How was it in X?
yeah, exactly. You know, to which I usually counter, well, could you be more general? I'm not quite sure where to start.
Okay, that kills my third question.
So
okay.
So like, what's George Strait like?
Or
is George Strait? Yeah, definitely. You know, is X scene cool?
There we go.
Yeah, I know. I could answer them. I've got answers for every one of them.
Maybe I should have just asked you for all the answers to the questions.
It's like telling punchlines to jokes, right?
Exactly. But that's not why we're here. The new album, and I'm gonna quote it because I thought it was such a great way to publicize an album, and I don't know if it was yours or the bio folks wrote it, but that it's not punk, but it's sex, drugs, death, loss, longing, and alienation. But yet it's not a, so of course I read this and I think I'm about to listen to a country album, and next thing you know, I just heard the rhythm and everything else alone, and it's not a country album, but and I don't want to say, are you making a statement here, but you know, what's going to surprise people when they see it and then they suddenly put it in the CD player and hear it?
That it's the closest thing I could come to a Howlin' Wolf record.
Mm-hmm.
Except without the vocals. It's pretty dark, but it's not mopey. And it's a lot of reverb. Don't be afraid of the reverb.
It's a funny story. There's one of the current British bands, I forgot if it's the Delays or whatever, they went all the way to Rockfield Studios, to Dave Edmunds' studio, to record there, to get that reverb.
Well, I mean, you can get it on Pro Tools, but it helps to have the vibe to, you know, you can create your own atmosphere, or you can go someplace to get even more of that. We chose to just sort of create it, and I had a lot of help from the musicians that played on it.
And it is a very homemade album, and yet, and I'm going to use a dangerous term, it's one of the slickest homemade and well-produced homemade albums I've heard in a long time.
Well, it doesn't have to sound crappy to give you the feeling of being...
Oh, come on, John Indy, you're at South by Southwest, it has to sound crappy. It is either be really slick or really crappy. It has to be one of those.
Oh, okay, then it's really crappy.
Induced crap?
No, I think it's lame to be self-conscious and you know, layer on some crappy sound if you have the ability to make it sound good. I mean, it sounds good, but it doesn't... I mean, maybe we're good players. I mean, we sat in a room and played the songs, and all the vocals are live, and then we called up the fancy singers, and they came in and sang their song, and, you know, I think the main thing we did, Dave Way, who's the co-producer, and I, is we said, let's keep the mics far away from the instruments so that it has that air and room, and it does sound like... you don't have a number of channels, you just have a number of microphones. So, I mean, we used the modern stuff to fix things when it was bad, and when it was not that bad, we left it.
But the amazing thing, you know, you're talking about a Howlin' Wolf album or any of that Chess stuff, when it's remastered, and when you, I mean, I've listened to it on the old 45s, and it just sounds, of course, incredible. You know, you play it on a turntable. And then when you remaster it, it's not that it loses its sound, but you do discover a lot of stuff. But most importantly, you discover that the difference between 1957 and how that Sun stuff was recorded and now, in the end, that stuff sounded beautiful when it was done right. It was gorgeous. Yeah,
that's all you need. You need 3 minutes and a piece of tape.
I mean, but it was warm. It had warmth, you know?
Well, there's a thing about records that they just sound black. They sound blacker.
Have they done vinyl on...
No, not for this. But Yep Rock is a great company. Anybody who's thinking about talking to Yep Rock has that opportunity. They're right on.
Boy, look at that. Right there. Yep Rock, right label. There you go. Thank you for the segue, John. That was a beautiful happening love thing. Right there, boy. Right. That acting timing came right in there. But all kidding aside, they either know about Yep Rock, and it's funny because I turn to them, and every time a Yep Rock thing comes in the mail, I end up playing it because there's such a interesting, they're in the middle of, places where record companies aren't necessarily supposed to be. And
yeah, well, they're from North Carolina, which I think is, good because of the, college crowd and them being music fans. And they have an eclectic blend of artists that are on it, but it's not just one thing or another. It leans towards Americana stuff. But, the Sadies and Los Straitjackets are pretty far apart. They're both on Yep Rock, and then they just have good business sense. And then there's Nick Lowe and Dave Alvin and Southern Culture on the Skids, I think, and the 45s. And, it's just a lot of...
It's a great lineup. Who found their way to whom?
Oh, I just was sending out stuff, to a bunch of people. Lost Highway and Rounder and what have you. And they were the ones that seemed to get it. And, yeah.
Yeah, and they're getting it out there, so that's a great thing. So speaking of the fancy female singers, Kristen Hirsch and Nico, and your daughter.
Yeah, yes,
she's a fancy female singer.
Well, she is.
Age of what? 16 or 17?
She's 17 now. Yeah, she is fancy. She's pretty fancy in her own understated way. She sang the song like twice, and we used both. both takes, and it was like, oh, it's that easy. She's just really, has a really sweet high voice, and we wanted to try to use that for this song. Plus, it would keep me out of trouble to say, if I was singing with someone else, to say, let's run away and run away together. I can say that with my daughter. If I was to say that with, some other babe.
You don't want to say that with Kristen.
Billy would get mad, her husband, and my wife would get mad. But it's, it's
all... Little problems.
It's
there.
All art. It's all art.
It's all for the art. Now, I don't really know, I'm going to be ignorant here, Cindy Lee Berryhill.
Cindy Lee is a folk singer from Cindy Lee Berryhill, folk singer from San Diego. She's just been a friend for a long time. She was part of the inspiration of that song, Repeat Performance, which is about 2 or 3 years old. Because we were touring together and you just keep going to the same place, same club. Somebody introduces themselves, you get, sort of interested in them, and then you realize, what the hell am I doing? I can't, this is too much the same as another time, and I've, learned my lesson, that kind of thing.
Got it. And then the choice of Nico and Kristen, both... iconic, but very different kinds of icons. Nico is obviously, the Canadian chanteuse of the moment, and Kristen is definitely been through a lot of different things.
Right. Kristen, who has arrived at in her pre-middle age to play punk rock, which
exactly.
I think is great.
Exactly.
Kristen is a force of nature. She's just like, when she's singing solo stuff, which is most of what I know of her, it's just so intense without being noisy, without being...
it's quiet, but it really eats at you as you're listening to it.
Oh, it's like she's boring a hole into your brain with her eyes and her lyrics and music and everything. And, she and I have talked enough about people dying and how weird it is to be a survivor and stuff, and that's sort of what that song was about. So I knew that she would have that impact in that song, and we kind of, Dave and I decided, Dave Way decided, and I decided who to call based on what the songs sounded like after they started to take shape. And Highway 5, we chose Nico because I wanted to have her on something, especially something with some distance, and because of her, again, reverb, her love for reverb. Nico loves the reverb. That's the very first thing she says to any sound man.
Can you put some reverb on that?
You can have some reverb. So yeah, she was a natural choice for Highway 5.
Well, heck, Phil Spector did okay with the reverb, so...
Yeah, it comes and goes. It comes and goes out of fashion, and if you're not careful with it, everything just sounds far away and not very immediate. But it also can give you a feeling of late night, a feeling of, mystery and good stuff.
Yeah, and this album... As you were describing the Eats at You, as you really get into it and as you listen to it, it really starts kind of getting into your soul to a certain extent, and you start really thinking about all the themes in there. And it's, I was with Aaron Espinosa not long ago of Early Martin, and we started talking about Elliott Smith because he donated his, dedicated his latest album to him. So without asking you the X and the punk question, one of the things, I think it was Terry Nunn of Berlin who was my favorite, we were sitting there in Malibu, overlooking the water, and I looked at her and I said, "So, how did you survive?" And I think it's a question I always like to ask any iconic, rock musician. Tell me about survival. You know, let's get a little ethereal here, but because this album reeks of all of these tales, but it reeks of survival too, and you've seen a lot.
Oh, well, you kind of, when you ask that, you kind of play into the ego, well, let me tell you see.
Yeah, right, well, partner.
And
but I'm going at it a different way. I'm going at it for more of the sincere, we're sitting here at South by Southwest, there's 1,200 bands, everybody wants to make it in rock and roll because it's the glitz of the moment, and yet you and I are sitting here, we're of an age. You're about 5 years older than me, I think, but we're still of an age where we're still here and we're healthy and we've, have a 3.5-year-old daughter, we have lives, and yet we still can do the rock and roll, as David Letterman would say,
the rock and roll. The rock and roll. I think that you survive by not buying into the myth, trying to live the rock and roll lifestyle beyond what you naturally want to do, having a life, having other interests, having other opportunities, and
doesn't that inform the music much better?
It can. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that's not usable in writing, and then there's just being plain lucky that I met X-Scene, plain lucky that when we did heroin, we didn't overdose, and plain lucky that. When you're driving drunk, you didn't kill somebody and kill yourself. I mean, there's all that stuff. And being, I guess, getting up to the edge and stepping back a little bit, I don't know. I mean, it's just we are lucky, and no, Jesus is not my personal savior.
you're not wearing a bumper sticker on the back of the shirt.
The back of my ass.
Right, yeah, can you imagine? right. Kiss this for Jesus.
Yeah. Let's talk about religion. Let's just have a moment for how much I dislike religion. There, I've said it. kids have an interesting way of viewing God. One of my fondest memories of my youngest child is she comes home from Sunday school and she's at about 5 or 6 and says, Dad, God made the world. To which I said, no, he didn't. And then went, don't! I mean, what I meant to say is there are lots of people who aren't very smart who think that he did. And then there are other people who think that maybe he didn't. And don't!
Now she got older, she found out that Donald Trump made the world.
Yeah. That's fun. It's fun to play with kids and make them grow. But you also get a chance to work with people from different styles of music, like with these singers and stuff, and you influence them and they influence you, and it's not just a big happy family, but it's kind of like this is the community. And if you can't take advantage of that and really see it for what a kind of gift and advantage to experience that, it's like, wow, you're just missing it, because that's one of the greatest things. Hey, I get to sing with Nico Case. She came to when we played in Tucson a few days ago, came to the show and sang on a couple songs, and was like, whew, I'm just like, here's this bombshell redhead who's got the most wonderful voice, and she's up there singing with us. This is the business.
But I think it's a wonderful thing that you did the reversal, because I'm sure Nico was sitting there saying, wait a minute, I'm singing with.
Well, I mean, like I say, it's not, just a self-congratulatory society. And I had this opportunity to play for this Graham Parsons tribute show. And Keith Richards was just such a hero, because he understood that. He was at the rehearsal. He was at the sound check.
He did what he was supposed to do.
He was at the show, and he, hung out and talked to people. And, I mean, there's layers of handlers and crap like that, but he was there, and he didn't have to be, and he had a friend, 30 years ago that he still remembers. And that's why he did it, and he understood that, being part of the musical community or any kind of community, if you're in a small town, if you're in a neighborhood and you work at the school, and it's like, it's incredibly rewarding,
And there would have been no Wild Horses if it wasn't for...
Graham
Parsons.
And he knows that, and some people didn't take advantage of that, who will remain nameless, because, it's just too bad, it's there. And it helps, and that's a way of surviving as well, even though some people don't take advantage of it.
And you're not busy enough, I don't think. So what's the latest on the acting side of Insanity?
Because
you don't have enough going. You need a busier life.
Yeah, I do. Everybody wants to be busy. Work is good.
Work is good.
I did a bunch of TV in the last, year and a half. I got to work with the inimitable David Crusoe. From
Inimitable, yes.
CSI Miami. People ask me, so why does he have his head tilted like that all the time? And I can't tell you, but he does. I don't know. I've been in a couple of independents lately that aren't out, and you never know with those. I just try to keep doing it. Maybe next year. This is the year for music. Next year will be for movies, maybe.
Very cool. So the last thing that I like to do, which has kind of become a tradition, is I call it the musical sandwich. And it's a great way to get people into the new music without having to say, this is the new music.
Right.
So what I'd love you to do is pick two tracks from the new album as kind of the bread. And then as many songs as you've always wanted to kind of stick in between it. And then I will literally play that set exactly as you ask me to play it. Which makes it, and normally I lot
of... Can we do the concentration music while I'm preparing this?
Yes.
Dun, 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 dun. Okay, the Bread songs, not by the band Bread.
I want to make it with dough.
With Jew.
With Jew, yeah, right, exactly.
Jews, I want to make it with Jews.
There you go. Was that David Gaitowitz?
Yeah, he's... Are you kidding? He's
the man.
He's like Neil Diamond and David Gates. They're like...
They're the man.
They're the Brooklyn Jews of rock.
There you go.
Okay.
So then why wasn't the band called Chala?
Masa. Yeah. It's called Masa Los Lonely Boys.
Exactly.
Okay. I'll pick The Losing Kind and Ready. For the Bread songs, and then the other songs are supposed to be other people, right?
That would be helpful, but you could throw in some of your, whatever works for you works for me.
That's good. And I'll take I Will Dare by the Replacements, and Deep Red Bells by Nico Case on Blacklisted, and $50 Whore by Anne McHugh, and Boom 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 by John Lee Hooker, and All Day and All the Night by the Kinks. And then Don't Go Down by Elliott Smith on his new record. And then, I can't remember the, Kathleen Edwards, the first track off of Kathleen Edwards' new
record. Oh, yeah, I played that. It's a great CD.
Yeah, good CD.
Excellent.
And, or Mercury on her second, on her first CD. And then Teenage FBI by the Guided by Voices. And then I Don't Want to Spoil the Party by the Beatles.
But I'll go. It's amazing how much the Kinks has come up recently.
Yeah.
A lot of guest sets suddenly. I think people are, you know, maybe because Ray's been through some tough stuff and people are paying attention again. Or maybe just because they were, now, I don't want to say the great unsung band, because that was obviously the Herman's Hermits, but, you know, or Jerry and the Pacemakers. We know they were the real stars of the,
yeah.
But yeah, the Kinks have come up quite a...
Well, a friend of mine just had this CD of their first record. And then I think first and second LPs. And the very first song sounded like something from Sun.
Yeah, very much
with
so.
I don't know who was the guy that sang with a real gravelly voice.
Oh yeah, I know who you're talking about.
And it sounded like Billy Lee Riley or Warren Smith or something like that.
Yeah, they started in a very different place and then kind of progressed.
And then all of a sudden there's like well-respected man. And
it's like, where did that come from?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it came from the English beat.
Yeah.
You know, part of the thing. But they were a great band, you know.
Absolutely.
Kick-ass
Absolutely.
Guitar playing and when they went I hope that whoever, you know, when whoever got that riff of you know, All Day and All the Night, when they first played that, they just thought, oh yeah.
Yeah. Right.
It's like bam.
Yeah.